So the session has started, and I'm now going to work you through the submission of the essay, and I'm going to make a few changes here. First of all, let's go into the assessment, and it says the David Maloof essay is due on the 10th, but Rosanna's quite right. You need not only time tonight with your learning partners to get your work edited, but you also need time next Wednesday to get your learning partners to help you to submit it. So I'm actually going to put the lodge date. What do you think? The Thursday after the Wednesday, the 12th? Would that be good? So I'll put here the dates. Due date is October the 12th at 11:59, so you can do a bit of extra work if you want to. They can show you how to submit it. You can submit it with them on the Wednesday if you want. The purpose of this gets a little bit complex, but I don't want to make it complex. At university, with Turnitin, you can submit the essay a few days before it's due, and Turnitin will give you a report. What the report shows you is whether you've copied anything from the internet without acknowledgement. And if you have copied something without acknowledgement, it's considered plagiarism. That's what happens at university. So in that sense, it's good to post it and to turn it in first to make sure you haven't copied a whole paragraph without acknowledgement. You can copy as much as you like as long as you say where it's from. That is, with a reference. And there's a way of referencing it. Modern Languages Association is what we use at university. And I'll show you simply how to do that. Wherever you get a quote, you put, after the quote, you put brackets like that. You can find this information on the website as well. I'll show you where in a minute. There's a quote, and you put Maloof, and you put the page 32 like that. That's all it is. Author and page, no punctuation, and page.
Well, where do you put this?
And that is, you put that in your essay. That's in the body of your essay, wherever you're quoting. For instance, if you're quoting from the book,
for instance,
Maloof,
like I've done today, I think it's in my introduction or whatever. No, it's on second part,
yep.
Which is I think it says it on page 39. Yes, here.
Okay.
So I just didn't put the author part in.
You put the author,
but I wrote all of this.
Yeah.
Is like I wrote here was a mixture of monstrous strangers as quoted, and then I wrote what was written.
Yeah.
And then. Put in brackets page 39, but I didn't put the quote.
You don't have to put page, you just put 39.
39.
You just put 39. And the other thing is,
right, Maloof 39.
Yeah, Maloof 39. However, I don't want to complicate this too much, but if the author is evident from what you've said in the preceding sentence, for instance, if you say Maloof said and then you quote, you don't have to put Maloof in the bracket. But for safekeeping, put the author there anyway. Put the author in the page without a punctuation mark.
Yeah.
All right, does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I got down in chapters 6, page such and such, yeah. Maloof says, blah, blah, blah.
You can do, that's also legitimate. You can do that. If you're writing it as part of your sentence, then you don't need to do that. If you're indicating that it's the author from where it's from and what the page is in your sentence.
But it doesn't have all this name, you put all this name.
Yeah. Okay. If it's a quote without clear indication of where it's from, author and page.
Okay.
All right. And this is called in-text citation. That's what it's called, in-text citation. It's in your text, you are citing the location of the quote. And this is the Modern Languages Association. All right? That's what you do. Now,
you don't have to put MLA there, but
you don't have to put MLA. No, that's just telling you what kind of, because when you get to uni, you might be doing literature and you might be doing philosophy, you might be doing every subject uses a different form of referencing. Don't tell me why, but that's just the way it's evolved.
Yeah.
That's just the way it's evolved. Now, the other thing is, I'll show you on the website where you can have a closer look at this. At the end of your essay, you have what with MLA is called, you know, some people call it a bibliography. Bibliography means all the books that you've read in producing this essay, or all the websites you've seen. In MLA, they call it works cited. That's what the list is called, works cited. And cited means what you've actually quoted from. So you don't have to put in here all the stuff you haven't quoted from. You just have to put here what you have quoted from. And there is an MLA formula for how that's put. And if we go and have a look here, let me go and find it for you.
What does MLA stand for?
Modern Languages Association. So if you go into where is it? This is what the site looks in your view. If you go into Useful Resources has got a whole lot of stuff here that's worth having a look at. But here is one called Academic Skills Focusing on Referencing. And this one?
No, up the top.
Academic referencing, here it is, sorry.
Oh, where's Ray? What is he missing?
They missing for 2 weeks.
Yeah,
it wasn't last week. He might still turn up though.
Mm. He's missing too.
So you've got, did you see where I went there?
Yeah.
Just go back. I'll go back. Some of you might have missed that. I nearly missed it. So you go into Academic Skills, and you go into Academic Referencing at the top here, and then you click on this booklet, and in the booklet it's got all these different, these are all the different sorts of referencings you can get at university. Vancouver, MLA, Chicago, Harvard, they're all slightly different. But people get very finicky if you don't use the one you're supposed to use. So MLA referencing, and here's the introduction to the MLA referencing system.
If everything else was fine and you got the referencing wrong, so you'd fail.
No, you don't fail. You don't fail, but it's expected that you do.
Can you then this tutorial will provide information and examples for the MLA referencing style based on the 8th edition of the MLA handbook. MLA uses an author page system. The in-text citations include the author's surname and the page numbers from the source material.
That's what I just said. The page number and the author. Yeah.
MLA is mostly used in the humanities, including literature students at ACU. For in-text citations, you need to include the author's surname and the page numbers from the source you used. The author page system within parentheses demonstrates that the information preceding the parentheses can be found on the page cited and was written by the author listed. If the author's name is used in a sentence, only the page number is provided in parentheses.
So that means if you've said the author's name in the sentence, you don't need to provide the author's name in the parentheses. Parentheses means brackets.
Oh,
parentheses is brackets.
For great support lines and less, the copy text within double quotation marks.
I'm not going to be too finicky about this. What it just said there, for quotes that are less than four lines of quotes, it can be simply embedded in your sentence within double quotation marks. All right? So if it's not more than four lines, if it's more than four lines, you indent it and put it as a separate quote. Okay?
The citation appears after the closing quotation mark, but before the final punctuation mark. For a direct quote, the author's surname and page number need to be included in parentheses. If quotations are more than four lines long, they are indented 5 to 7 spaces from the left margin. No quotation marks should be used, and the quotation is double-spaced.
So,
What?
Don't worry, Ronan. Don't worry, Ronan. Don't worry.
This is stressful, man.
Your learning partners, that's
so
what they're there for. They will help with all of that.
They've got examples here, look. Examples.
Or you can just pay $39 and you can just put your essay and then they edit it and publish it and do all that kind of stuff
look,
for an academic level. Cost you $39.
Neil.
Yes.
Look what's on the screen right at this minute.
Neil's looking at it.
Here's an example page, which is underneath the... I'll just go back where you find it. So here's an example. There's the quotes and the page. There's an author's name, and this is from a journal, so they've had to put the journal name in. Author's page. And at the bottom, works cited, and this is how you do it. You put the author's surname followed by the Christian name. If there's two authors, that's how you do it. And the title of the book in italics, and then the edition, and then the publisher, and then the date. So you just follow.
No, we're supposed to put book or.
No, you don't put book.
I thought we did that with NLA.
No, you don't put book and essay, you just put them all by author. All by author.
So,
no, at the end of it. I thought you had to put like Julian, whatever it is, and then at the end go book, or you go website, or.
What's that thing about dyslexia?
That's dyslexia. That's an article called Dyslexia in the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Oh, yeah. Because okay. That's my problem. That's what I have.
Yeah.
I have a big bad problem.
Yeah, well, don't worry about that. So, if you go to academic referencing here, then underneath that video that you can watch that takes you 4 minutes, if you go then and have a look at the example here, there's four examples, there's a quick guide, then the MLA example paragraph and reference list. If you follow that to the best of your ability, that's all I want you to do. I'm not going to penalise you for minor misdemeanours or anything like that. And most of you will be writing from your understanding of the book. You might have done a few readings of some of the other materials that I've put onto the LEO website. If you have and you've quoted from them, then reference them. If it's a website, you reference the website. You copy the website, and sometimes the website doesn't have pages. So you can't put a page if there's no page in the website. So as long as you reference it, that's all that's needed. All right? So I think that's probably all I need to say there for the moment.
Yeah, a question.
Yeah.
The audiology of the book.
Yeah.
A lot of references I've looked at have influenced what I write. So do I have to say that?
No, you don't. That's what I'm saying, that works cited, you only put in the works cited list works that you've actually quoted from.
Right.
Your wider reading from bibliographies, from encyclopedias, from articles and what have you, your wider reading, if it's influenced your point of view, you don't have to cite those unless you've actually quoted from in the text.
Right.
Make sense?
Right. Okay. Even if you use two words out of there, thing, do you have to?
Yeah, if you use two words out of the thing and you put quotes around them, then you put that in your works cited list.
Okay.
Because
someone else has already said that.
Yeah.
Because somebody has said
paraphrased
that.
Paraphrased it. That's
right. That's right.
Well, there's not much that hasn't been paraphrased about this book then. It's been done by like 1.67 million people.
Yeah, and it's been translated into 15 different languages,
yeah,
David
Malouf. How many people have done essays and
that's right.
The same questions that have been asked.
Different.
I punched in one of these questions on Google, and it gave me all these pages to look at.
Very good. You're
you know
good,
I mean?
Good
like
researcher.
Millions and millions of pages to look at.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
I do.
So there's not one word that you can write that hasn't already been written about this book.
Okay.
Unless you don't look up anything on the internet and just do it.
But even then, if you don't look...
Well, then you don't have to cite anything.
That's
because
right.
It's all just coming from you.
That's
well,
right.
Yeah, but I mean, you're using, you know, like, yeah, it's hard to explain. Like, I picked up the ideology of the book before I seen it on the internet. You know what I mean?
And
what do you worry about?
And then that's fine. And then you
so
just write
you do
that.
Things like, you know, you say, you know, this book says blah, 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 and... You know, Harry Smith, or not Harry Smith, but Smith also agrees with this, and he then also says something else that I didn't pick up. Yeah.
You know, that's...
But
so I said to you last week at the...
You learn that kind of thing.
At the gallery, about the early settlement, how young the country is.
Yeah.
And about the Aborigines and the black and white and the different tongue and the, you know, early colonialism. All that kind of stuff you pick up through the book for his ideology. You know, the way he expresses it, the way he writes and he expresses it.
Yeah.
But when you go to write any of that, about any of that stuff,
yeah,
you can't. Because it's someone else already picked that up. Same ideology.
Of course you can. You can write exactly what you want to think. Of course, all our thoughts are shaped by the ideologies and the context from which we come. None of us are original.
Yeah.
None of us are, as it were, like newborn babies who see the world afresh.
Yeah.
And that's just part of the way we are. It's not a problem. But I want to take up your point about the art gallery, and I just want to share with you some of the wonderful blogs that were done last week that really showed people's appreciation of the links between literature and art. I want to do that for 10 minutes, and then I want, for about 15 minutes, I want to help you formulate a question for David Maloof, so that when you come, everybody in this room has got a question they can ask him and he can respond to that. And the question could be directly related or indirectly related to the essay question you've chosen, or it could be something more broad than that. So we're going to prepare for that because he's going to be here in 40 minutes. So just quickly to go through here, and not so quickly either, I want to start off with Song's beautiful entry here about how can art deepen our understanding of literature. And that's the painting that Song decided to write on. And the comment that I made on his work was, Song, this is a passionate and beautiful interpretation of the painting, Spring Frost. More importantly, it brings all your knowledge and understanding, just making this a bit bigger, it brings all your knowledge and understanding of the way the medium of art works into relationship with what you understand of the way literary language works. Your comments about layers and depth in both paint and words are especially interesting and useful. Well done, Song. You have added a dimension to our understanding of the links between these art forms. Now let's have a look at what Song has said here. Both art and literature, well, he starts off, appreciating art is similar to getting to know a book. Both art and literature tend to be intensively addictive. They both create an abundant reflection of ourselves. The bountiful colours and expressions create strong emotions which make us reflect. It touches our most delicate feelings, which are often hard to put into words. It is an intense expression of what we know to be self. When painting, we can start with just a few colours, but by the moment we mix these colours together, they become more complex. When I look at a painting at first, it looks simple, but when I look closer, I realize there are so many different unique layers. It's the same when I read a book, but with words. As we learn more about literature, gain new words and understanding, it is like a tree birthing more leaves. When I read the beginning of a book, it is very blurry, but the carefully written words gradually reveal the book's sophistication with an intense saturation of color. This is evident in the painting Spring Frost. The picture carries a very deep perspective. The blurry, faraway images give us feelings that are very ordinary and grey, but this is contrasted, almost juxtaposed, by the nearby scenery of the textured grass, the frost and the cow's fur, which create feelings that are more intense. I think that's wonderful. That's really, really good, Song. It's a really inspired piece of writing. Inspired. Very good. Kind of shows the understanding of texture in paint and texture in words.
You know what I found interesting about that painting was?
Yep.
I've never seen that under outline of the cow's hair in the morning, which is actually, it's actually a real reflection, because I grew up on a farm with Simmental cattle like that.
You're
you know,
right.
I've never seen an undertone like that, you know, highlighted so beautifully, you know, with the morning sunlight.
Yeah.
Because it must be the dew or something reflecting off the ground.
The mist, yeah, that's right.
The sun reflecting, you know, and giving it...
Yeah.
accentuating it a bit more.
Giving it life. Mm. Yeah, no, it's really beautiful. Fantastic. So it was worth going to the gallery for that, definitely. Rima. So Rima. So what did I say about Rima? Did I say anything? I did. One comment. Your entry on Notes to Basquiat. Now, you remember the Notes to Basquiat?
Yes.
We've got that painting somewhere. I've got it somewhere on here. Yeah, the indigenous one. Let me see if I've got it here somewhere.
Is it Basquiat or Basquiat?
I did have it here. Which one of these is it? Not that one. Was it a bit earlier? Did we go and see it at the beginning? Was it early in the piece? Somewhere like there, maybe? No? It was after that.
After that.
It was somewhere.
Before that it was.
I think it was after. Was it before that?
Just before or just after.
Yeah.
Well, that one was good. The Roy de Mason one was hectic.
Must have been after. There it is.
That's my favourite one.
This is the one. This is the Basquiat one. And what did Rima say about it? She said, I said, your entry on Notes to Basquiat is a really remarkable entry, Rima, and shows a deep understanding of the way literature and art do interact with each other, especially in the way they both use their media to respond to issues of social justice. Especially good was the way you were able to link this back to remembering Babylon and the special place that Jenny has in that narrative as a victim. Well done, and thank you for bringing all these elements together. And this was her entry. Notes to Basquiat, Gordon Bennett. In general, it seems to me that visual art and literature are different modes of the same process of conveying a message that, while acting independently, are parallel yet can influence each other. Having a common purpose, there ought to also be ideological, thematic, or construction-based links between the two. Notes to Basquiat is an example of such a link, which can deepen our understanding of the host of problems, injustices, and undue pains that racial discrimination or racially constructed identification can create generally, and especially in those such as Jenny in Remembering Babylon, or the artist Gordon Bennett, who passed neither as white nor black by such an artificially constructed dichotomy. The painting's clear line of division in one and the same man can throw a clearer light on the schizophrenic tendency in Jemmy's behaviour, which is the product of the ignorance-based reactions of those around him.
Schizophrenic.
So there we go.
I don't know if he is schizophrenic.
Yeah, well, we can question and argue with Rima about her interpretation.
a lot of
them as though he is, because
yeah.
He doesn't know how to relate to them. Like they have totally different.
Yeah. Jemmy has two sides, mate. A lot of stuff that I've been looking at says that, you know, he was an antagonist.
Well, he wasn't an
antagonist.
He wasn't an intentional antagonist,
but his physical and knowledgeable composure of the land was antagonizing for the white.
It was antagonizing them. He was antagonizing them by his presence.
That's right.
But he wasn't an antagonist by virtue of his actions.
That's right.
That's right. Okay. Good. So let's go on and have a look at something else. Let's have a look at Adelaide.
My painting was there before. I didn't put it up. You know, the lady lies
yeah, that's
back.
It. I'll go there and get there. Let's go and have a look at the painting.
It's opposite inbox or something. You
there
got
it
before.
Is.
It's
I did.
Behind
there
that
it is.
One.
There it is. So this is the painting that Adelaide talked about. Let's have a good look at it. So Adelaide said, read more. And I made a comment. Now, I'll read Adelaide first in this instance.
we did ours at the same time.
The painting of Simon and Iphigenia by Frederick Lord Leighton gives us an understanding of the story from Greek mythology. Now, Greek mythology, of course, has been written down, is a form of literature. Okay, Greek mythology is literature. Aristippus, Simon interpretation brute, was completely uncouth and uneducated. One day he came upon a girl, Iphigenia, asleep with her slaves in the meadow and became transfixed by her beauty. He decided to abandon his boorish ways and acquire the accomplishments fitting to the nobility of his station. This translates to love. This translates to love can transform your life. There is beauty and beauty. Some forms are cold and clinical, but one does not want to possess it. There is another beauty that so astounds you, you must have it at all costs, almost to the point of wanting to kill the object of your desire if your feelings are not reciprocated. In extreme cases, if I cannot have her, no will.
No one will.
No one will. Thank you. This story tells how with every molecule of Aristippus' being, he willed his transformation physically and mentally, so when Iphigenia awoke, she would be equally mesmerized and have met her match. The sun peeking over the horizon symbolizes the beginning of Aristippus' transformation. While the servants are asleep, the dog stands guarding the sleeping form of his mistress. Iphigenia is so enticing with her arms thrown back and surrendering to sleep, so sensuous in her own skin, that I defy any man not to have fallen in love. This is my interpretation of the literature related to this painting and Frederick Lord Leighton's rendition of the subject. And my comment, that is a beautiful entry, Adelaide. You write so well. More importantly, you found a really ingenious way to link this painting to literature. Our trip was, of course, about art and literature. What are the connections? I was simply showing the painting as an example of how a painting like a story or a poem was also telling a story or a narrative, trying to show you that both paintings and stories tell narratives. But you have so cleverly... I've written this badly. You have so cleverly
come back
to the literary sources and origins that led Frederick Leighton create this work. In doing this, you have shown so well how art and literature are inextricably interrelated. So Leighton actually drew on the literature of ancient Greek mythology to produce this.
Okay. Well done. Top marks.
Top marks. That's it.
Oh.
And here we go. Last but not least, Neil. I'm not picking everybody because everybody didn't write on the art gallery visit last week. I'm just picking those that did. Nothing wrong with the other ones you did, but we don't have time to do everything. So where are we here? Concrete poetry, here it is.
Oh, he did the Roman Domation one?
He did. But look what he said. He said, I believe that art, and not only did he do the one with the painting in it, he's the only student in this class who put the painting up with, no, Song did as well, sorry.
Song. Who did this one?
Neil.
I also did that one.
You did, but you didn't post it up.
No, I'm posting it, I'm just...
Too late. I'll see you next week. So Neil has mastered the art of putting visuals up there as well.
Yes, it's a big hassle.
Neil, well done.
As Michael very well knows.
I believe that art is a powerful way into literature. For example, by looking at this painting and the fact that it was painted for healing injured soldiers, the artist was a strong believer in music and art for healing. So for me to look and study this piece, I automatically think of poetry. The colours and spiralling contrasts portray imaginary words that give rhythm and rhyme. The way the spiral moves in and out, colours that captivate the heart, brush strokes that create words that if seen give a poetic verse. We often just admire for what it is, but rarely do we link it with literature, unless, of course, you're doing a literature course. Now that I've had the great opportunity to be given a guided tour by Michael Griffith Lecture, I now look at art and can instantly see the artist's words through his brushstrokes and the imagery of the painting. Literature in literal terms, when written in poetic prose, or even when combined, as David Malouf has done in the novel Beyond Babylon, is also art. Well done. Fantastic. What I've said to you here, you've already got the comment, I assume, have you?
No.
I've got the comment here. Hey, Neil, this is a fabulous entry that shows your openness to a new understanding of the way different art forms are interrelated. In fact, as I was reading there, it almost reads like a poem. You've got a poem in there. You've got the rhythmic movement there.
I tried to do a tab in my loop.
You've got it. You've got it. Well done. I like especially the way you're recognizing the links between rhythms and shapes in painting and then in poetry. You express this well.
However,
You do need your learning partner to take you slowly through this piece to make all your sentences work perfectly. There is not much to do, but you need a little help with the sentence construction. Looking forward to seeing you at the session with David Maloof today.
Yes.
Now, before we go to the David Maloof, we're going to have to do that fairly quickly. I just want to tell you all that on your table, you have got Act 1 of The Merchant of Venice, together with the introduction from the book that you're getting next week. They've arrived in the mail at uni for me this afternoon. They didn't come early enough for me to give them to you. So I've copied off Act 1, Scene 1 of the play. And if you weren't at the gallery with us last week, I also gave everybody a copy of this prose version of The Merchant of Venice. I've got one for you, Coralie. Did anybody not pick this up last week, the prose version? The prose... You've got one? So I would like you all... Now, in Leo, please have a look at the things I've put up there. I've put a summary of the play up for you. There's a few other things up there. There's a review of the Bell Shakespeare performance we're going to look at. Try and read this story, because if you can manage this story, it gives you the whole story, the whole background. Because when we get into the text of the play itself, we're going to find it quite challenging in terms of the language. But I hope that within 2 weeks, you will be mastering the language and Shakespeare will be second nature to you. And then in the third week, we're having someone from Bell Shakespeare coming who's going to mould you all into actors and actresses to play a scene from The Merchant of Venice.
But who are we playing it for?
We're going to play it to an audience, of course. We won't play it to ourselves.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
When, though?
When? It's in the unit outline. It's the last day. And everybody can bring members of their family, and you can go out in the streets, the highways and the byways, and ring bells and tell them to come and see me in The Merchant of Venice.
Are we in costume?
You're in costume.
Oh dear.
Everybody's in costume. We're on a stage.
Our own costumes?
We all make our own costumes. We make our stage set.
Wow, really?
And then we go to the theatre on the last night and see what the real thing is like after we've already put it on. Don't look at me like that, Neil. It's all going to happen.
I've just got memories of when I was at school. And it was just before I left.
Yeah.
And we done Bye Bye Birdie.
Right.
On a stage production.
Fantastic. How was that?
Yeah.
Was that good?
It was pretty good.
All right, now listen, everybody, get your pens on your paper and please start writing a question for David Maloof, because he's going to come up these stairs very shortly. Get a question about the novel. If possible, see if you can tie it to a passage in the novel, something particular that when you read it, you either had a question about it or you've got some thought about it or something related to your essay. Complete silence for 10 minutes and then I'll drill down and listen to what you have got. 10 minutes.
What are we doing?
Writing a question for David. So when David is here, I'm going to be asking everybody in turn to ask your question of David. So get a question together for David Maloof. We might have time for a coffee before he comes. So we probably will need a coffee before he comes.
I think so.
Yeah.
You
wrote
your blog
trying
to do David Maloof. Yeah, I did. I tried to do David Maloof.
That's it. You getting the coffee? Yeah, good.
All right.
So, question for David Maloof. Have you got the book with you?
No.
Yep. Turn the pages, find some passage, some idea that really you think...
I've already got a question in my head. Do I have to write it down?
Write it down, because you'll forget. You'll be so nervous. You'll be quaking with fear when he's here.
Yeah, I won't be quaking.
He's such an intimidating man.
He doesn't intimidate
me
at all.
Get on with it. God, you'd be a hard bloke to deal with in a class.
Yeah,
you know, I'll go to school. Michael, about how old is David?
82. You've got a question for David Maloof, Coralie? Very good. That's fantastic.
But it's
not it's not totally specific.
Doesn't matter. As long as you want you to think of a question that's going to draw as much out of him as possible.
Mm.
You want to get as much from him, from his understanding of the novel, as you can.
Oh,
so think of a question that's really going to stir his thought about his own memory of his writing of it and his purpose for writing it. His purpose for writing this novel about this outsider and the outsider's impact on this community. What was he hoping to achieve through that narrative?
He was
very important in that whole development in Australian writing.
Yeah.
He was one of the first Australian writers to write with such precision about what goes on inside a human being, as well as descriptions about what goes on between human beings.
Yeah, he's just very descriptive, isn't he?
Very descriptive, but descriptive.
His use of commas, like there's always so many commas in every paragraph. Like that's what Charlotte was saying to me. She goes, "In my essay, I've got all these commas, like the sentences are really long."
You're right. If you could find a sentence in Nehr Ronan, a sentence that really has struck you, that you can remember, you could actually read it to him and ask him, is this what you were trying to do in here? Or what were you trying to do in this sentence? With this, if you could find something now, that could be really helpful, could be useful. If anybody wanted to buy a copy of this anthology, by the way, it's here for $10 again for this week.
Every
time you've got it, I've got no money. I'll get paper
something you'd like to focus on. Maybe you could quote that and ask him what he thought about that and develop that idea with him. That would be good. Have you got a question from Maloof Josh now?
Yes, I do.
Very good. So to be fair, I'm going to go around the class and ask each person to offer their question like that.
I can
start from there. But if he answers too long here, you might not get a chance. I think I'll start on this end because I'd like Coralie to begin and then you go around this way. Then Coralie can go. This is your blog.
This is my blog.
Oh, fantastic. I'll look at that when it's up there. I'm more interested in your David Maloof question at the moment.
Okay.
You're a quick worker. Who taught you to work so quickly?
Years on the Of course, once you've asked your question, you might want to build on that. You might want to add something that's quite legitimate.
Just some broad questions about.
I told David Maloof, by the way, Coralie, about your wonderful depiction of this dramatic moment in the start of the novel. I told him about this, and I also told him that you were a dancer at my university years ago, so he got a bit of an intimation.
But really, more than the dance, it was choreography.
It was.
Creative education.
That's right, it was. That's right, that's right.
And I hope they all mentioned it, but I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
I hear it on page.
Did you use the word in your question? So you've got to get three or four questions.
Sorry, what's that, Neil?
Use the word and why, and then say and why. So it's kind of like you're asking kind of three questions in one.
Yeah, but be gentle on him. Ask a bit, and then maybe ask another bit. Because he's got to keep it all in his head on the one time. Yeah, you could try it. And he'll say, well, I'll answer the first part first.
I want to maloof you.
I'm looking forward to this.
Look, don't get me wrong, I respect
the
man.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Have you got a question, Ronan, now?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Patricia, you've got a question? Good. You got a question, Adelaide?
I think so.
Yep. What's this about?
Oh, I got that at St. Canis' today, which was quite interesting.
At where?
St. Canny's Church. They had free things where we go and eat for free.
Okay, yep.
I just found it interesting. It seems to be a Picasso picture, but it's just as the writing.
It's fantastic.
You know? Yeah. The art is actually all writing, so it says things in there.
It's more a literary text than an artistic text.
Mm.
Reading pictures.
It says, one of the most memorable of Picasso's portraits is no doubt his Weeping Woman.
That's it. Well, listen, folks, you can come and get a coffee now because David will be here in 10 minutes. So come and get a coffee and then we will, as soon as you've got your question ready.
Coffee and smoke time.
That's it, go.
I don't smoke.
Good, very glad to hear it. Song, have you got a question?
Just a bit thinking. Put it in a little sentence.
That's right.
Not much. I'm really curious about.
Curious about?
About the.
I'm uneducated. You went to school, I didn't, you know what I mean?
Expectations
of questioning why the intellectual us.
Yeah.
That. Because in my case, I'm really stick on this language.
Yeah.
Even the question could be related to this.
Yeah, it could be a question, could be about language.
And then in the book, thinking about, the idea keeps around in my head for a while about Janet.
Yeah.
Jimmy somehow, I sense that he, although he tried to define himself, his nature form, sort of.
From the Aboriginal.
I mean, as the book says, he is an in-between creature that...
He's a what?
In-between creature.
An in-between creature, yeah.
So he himself got to try to build a certain identity,
yeah.
Yet doesn't come definition, rather the message comes from Janet.
That's right.
When Janet interprets certain side of him,
that's right.
It comes a very poised and
complete whole.
So
what's the question about that?
So the my question would be, if it's true that actually Molof's message coming through Jenny from top, beginning to end, so because once she had this stunning
experience,
the contact with him, suddenly she willing to open all her eyes.
That's
and
right.
Very observant.
That's right.
Person.
That's right.
Every single moment when others provide a different interpretation, she see through so deep into him.
That's right.
And after terrifying moment of not on her side, when Jimmy takes this the terror.
Every day, takes away
terrorism.
Terrorism.
Sorrow, yeah. After a while, Jimmy had the scene that on a railway somewhere, shouting out himself, and then kind of like. That's what in Jenny's sight, and then Jenny. Put it down as a sentence that.
Yeah. That's how lunch you was. That's like no one. That is left.
Slightly can see.
It's so sad.
Which is may not really understood about it.
Yeah.
So it feels like she's the one that's seeing Jimmy's grievousness at the moment.
Yeah.
That. And it was painful that how described that moment through Janet's eyesight with very softened words, sort of.
Yeah.
It's not directly touched, but it somewhat put she down of this certain emotion, rather bring a very condensed, meaningful sentence.
Yeah. Do you have that sentence?
I'm looking for it.
Okay.
I mean, okay, my point is, I sense Janet is seeing.
Yeah, man, he's not
sort of
just
a
bloke just walked out the front door.
Poetic sounds,
yes,
alongside all the book,
yes, but interpret something of Jenny.
Whatever she said is rather sound like one of song, and that song is the moment of remembering Babylon.
That's right.
So it's kind of like I was a little goosebumps about this. So I think Janet's portion, like the role, sounds like, seems like Molof purposely stand by Jimmy's journey, but with a little distance.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that Lachlan, this boy.
Lachlan,
Janet always have a little distance that hard to figure out.
Yeah, right.
And seeing very, very observed this person.
Yeah.
And then bring up certain definition or define it that like leading the readers.
That's right. To an understanding of what Jenny is.
Yeah. So
good.
If there's no Janet, I think the book gonna be like.
Okay. So that's good. So that's okay. So you have to present that simply, And you know, I think you start off with saying that you can see that Janet is his way of bringing Jemmy's significance into the reader's world.
Oh, yeah, yeah, convenience.
Convey. And why does he use Janet for this? And why doesn't he use
Jemmy? That's the probably question that's inside. I don't know about why.
That's right, that's right.
Okay, okay, all right. Okay,
good.
Stick on this.
Okay, stay with that one. That's excellent. Good, I'll be there.
Okay, Michael.
Are you coming in when David's there? You can't. You've got too many businesses at the door.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Someone's waiting for me.
Okay.
At home, I think, yeah.
Oh, okay, right.
I start cooking now.
Oh, you're going to go and cook now.
Yes, something like that. Okay, Michael, we'll talk next time.
See you, Bob.
Say hello to David.
I will, I will, I will.
See him now, me, I'll just...
Okay, good, good.
From last week,
yep.
Which I read,
yep.
And the third and the second one.
Okay, I'll have a look.
If you could, yeah, so that I could just then yeah. Write the essay.
Yeah, good.
Would that be all right?
That'd be good. Yeah, do the essay. That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent.
No. I mean, like, forced to go back to work or some sort of either full-time education program or something.
Yeah. Michael, Emma phoned Ray.
Emma.
Inside,
oh, yeah.
Phoned Ray. Yeah. And Ray said he was coming today, so
oh, wow.
I don't know what's happened. He could be away. That could be another thing.
Well,
he
wasn't at the gallery last week, and that wasn't like it.
Something's going on.
So anyway, if you see Ray, tell him where he's going to be for it.
Rosanna's on the walk.
Oh, I know. That's what
hey,
happens.
Ray.
When I don't see them, I put out the word. Like, oh, shit. Cause I always
so
say,
what's your question, Josh?
I'll read it.
No, tell us.
Italian. So I was just going to say that, let's say David. And
I was going to ask David.
So David, when you book, I found it's really interesting and got so much detail.
Unfortunately, yeah.
It's very visual. However, it reminds me so much of an actual person that I don't know.
What reminds you of a person? Which part?
The character.
Which character?
When I was very young.
Jemmy.
Jemmy. We don't see much of him.
No.
And then I went to boarding school when I was 10.
Jemmy reminds me of the character William Buckley. The actual William Buckley.
Yeah, who's William Buckley?
I don't even know very much about her.
He's got
actually
written it all down.
Will he know who William Buckley is?
Maybe her father was Italian.
Well, I was going to ask him, did you base your character on an actual... Who did you base your character on?
He did base his character on...
On William Buckley.
No, on a young fella. What was his name?
And what
nationality
are you?
The bloke that was based on an original story. On an original story.
I'm saying, did he base it on one particular character, or did he base it on many characters?
I don't think I mentioned his name, because I don't know his name.
At King's Cross.
Because
sure you read it.
It's a different
thing
altogether.
Yeah.
There was so many stories about.
I would have read it in one of my researches.
Like I've been at least around the context or whatever.
So hard to
imagine. Yeah. So we didn't get over the weekend.
We didn't get his inspiration.
Or did he have to do the weekend?
Did you make it home?
Just put the enigma. I just want to do a damn thing, mate.
Okay, yeah.
Now comes today, and I thought, well, the dentist thing's done, so now I've got the neurosurgeon on the 16th, so I'll be able to do my block, do that, and then the Merchant of Venice one, but might be a bit difficult, depends what happens to the neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens.
Do you like it?
One step at a time.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be here this week, and he's appeared.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm here.
If you were disappointed about not being...
take.
Yeah, I wanted to come in, sure.
To forget it.
You remember Nigel at the gallery?
Yeah.
He was a Clemente student here.
Yeah.
He wanted to be here this afternoon too.
That's right.
He wanted here to be here specifically to hear you asking a question of David Malou.
Really?
He really did. He said, I want you to record it. I want to hear what Neil says and what David Malou answers. Because Neil's going to give David a run for his money. That's the way Nigel expressed it.
No, you just be yourself.
Foreign, but then on the other side of the world, they're there.